Dream big and save big on your next backyard project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our Crescent Edgers on sale now through April 12th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey, what's up, everybody? This week, we're talking about one of my favorite hypercar companies in the world, the one and only Pagani. We're going to talk about Horacio Pagani's life, his upbringing in Argentina, and how he was able to meet a little guy named Juan Manuel Fangio, who helped ignite Horacio's career, brought him over to Europe, got him a job at Lamborghini. Well, kind of. Fangio didn't get him a job. He, like, helped him get a job. Anyway, it's a whole thing. You'll find out when we get into it right now. Geneva Motor Show, 1999. The 90s are coming to an end, but a new era in automotive technology was just kicking off. Technological advances never seen before, and several now iconic cars making their public debut. F1-style paddle shifters were making their way into supercars, and tech like computer-controlled suspension and state-of-the-art traction systems meant a huge leap forward in performance. But it was also an era of balance. Computers might have been making cars faster, but they were still very analog in feel. Several icons made their debut at Geneva this year, including the Ferrari 360 Modena, the Audi TT, and the E46 3 Series BMW. But no other car unveiled at the show represented this era of technology and soul like a small team from an unknown company called Pagani. The company was hardly 6 years old, but its founder, Horacio Pagani, had an incredible resume. He was a sort of prodigy and built working vehicles from bare essentials as a teen. He designed an F2 car and spent the 80s advancing composite material research and aiding the development of Lamborghinis. It was a bold gamble to take on established supercar brands. But the car Pagani unveiled in Geneva, the Zonda, was poised to change the supercar landscape in a significant and permanent way. How did the son of Argentinian bakers become one of the most respected car designers in the world? How did an unexpected marriage of cutting-edge technology and Renaissance philosophy shape his cars? And how did he change the supercar landscape into what we know today? Today on Pass Gas, it's the history of Pagani.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now, back to the show.
Hey. Pagani.
Pagani.
Wind.
Pagani. This is a cool topic because we got to interview Horacio Pagani himself a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be a couple months at this point, but he was super cool. His family's very nice. They do a lot of hugging.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. that's like the third thing you said.
What?
That you're like, very nice, good family, hugging.
You know, all companies are always like, we're like a family here. We're so close knit. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, like, do something that a family wouldn't do to you in a million years. But they're actually a family. There's two brothers that we saw. Mm-hmm. And then Horacio himself. And it's a very small team. Sebastian, their PR guy, was very nice too. But I just kept like, we were like mingling at the Pagani event at Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. And I just kept seeing them like, oh, hey. And then they would go hug people. It's a small community. These insanely bespoke cars. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's doing it for the love of driving.
I mean, I don't know if I got to say this in the episode where we interviewed him, maybe after we interviewed him, but I wanted to tell Horacio specifically that, you know, ever since I saw the Zonda as like, you know, on Top Gear years ago, like that has been my obscene wealth dream. Yes. Car, you know.
Oh, totally.
It's just the sickest, coolest car. I had this photoshopped
you inside of a Zonda.
No, not me inside of a Zonda. Someone on the cars subreddit, like, or car photography subreddit, like 10 or 15 years ago, made this picture where it was like a pink Zonda with like this like 80s model hanging out next to it. Oh. And I had that as my computer desktop for 5 years.
Yeah.
I
should find that someday. I don't think it's a real photo. I think someone photoshopped it, but it's like super sick. And that one.
Stop!
Isn't
okay.
that sick?
We yeah. gotta, well, obviously yeah. we'll put that into the edit. Yeah.
That is cool.
Man, so that's like your vision board.
I had that as my screensaver, or not screensaver, background for like 5 years, all through college. People would come in my room and be like, what's this guy's issue? But
this guy's a real Redditor.
It's a real one, a real nerd. But I don't know. I've always had a very appreciation for this brand, reverence for this company. These cars are just incredible. Going up to Monterey a few weeks ago, I know we're still on Monterey, guys, but it's very fresh in our minds. It was so cool to see one of these things in person, and also way bigger than I thought.
Yeah.
Like I don't know specifically like the dimensions, but like in person, they have such presence. They're just like in your face.
It's big and small at the same time. Yeah. Like we took a picture of Horacio sitting next to the wheel, and he's a small guy, but also like the wheel kind of dwarfs him.
It's like a 22. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge wheel, but then it's like maybe 44 inches tall. It's probably this, I don't know, 44, you know, 44 inches. But
yes, we all know what 44 inches looks like. Yes.
Hell yeah.
That's okay, so funny.
I have their technical specifications for the Huayra, at least. Hold on. Let's see how big this thing. Dimensions.
Can we introduce ourselves?
Yeah, one sec. Yeah. Length of 203 inches. That's actually pretty long.
That's long.
That's longer than my Mustang is and a little shorter than my truck. Wheelbase of 109 inches. A height of 45. This is the Huayra, though, so that's different. Anyway. Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes, talking Pagani this week. Very excited. Across from me, Joe Weber.
What up? I'm going to send Nolan a spec sheet and just completely distract him.
Yeah, you should. What was the, did you just search like pink Pagani wallpaper? Okay, hold on. I got to find this. And also joining us this week, fresh from Baja, Mexico.
That's true.
Baja. After taking a much deserved break and one advised by me.
That's
by
true.
Way.
Well, you're taking credit for that, huh?
I am.
He should take credit for that.
We got Christina Felski.
Hello. I am back on the show briefly for today.
Yeah.
How was Mexico and what'd you do down there?
Mexico was super fun. I took the Forester that we built out.
And you almost got domed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you don't even have a flag sticking out of your Subaru.
Sure don't. No, there were a ton of, there are a ton of people down there, like race teams, clearly, because we stayed at this place, Coyote Cal's. That's a hostel that's like on the route. And so a race team came in at like 9 p.m. when we were having one of the strangest dinners I've ever had at a place in Mexico, which is a Thai coconut chicken curry. It's the only thing on the menu. It seems
the only thing on the menu.
There was like also Baja 1000 spaghetti. And I was like, do you want spaghetti? Cool. And we were both like, no, we'll eat this.
What?
Oh, they have it on their website.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, it was good, though. There's a cute dog, a good cat at that place. I do recommend that hostel. I thought it was really cool.
Coyote Cal's.
We didn't have any donut
stickers,
and I was so bummed.
Because
it would have been really cool to put donut stickers.
They have a Thai sports massage advertised on their website.
Yes. She also does facial massage, which I was interested in, but I was like, do we want to do this right now?
Hey, the prices are quite reasonable.
The prices, it was $15 to just like camp in a place that felt extremely safe and comfortable.
I love Baja.
Yeah, cool. It was really fun. We had a great time. Driving there is very fun unless you are in the borderline and then it is bad.
How long did you wait coming back?
Coming back only an hour and a half,
dang,
which was not bad.
Whoa.
But going out for some reason, like we were in the car for 8 hours. It was awful.
I should have brought some freaking fracturas in. Sweet rolls that come in many different shapes.
I could
and
have brought some snacks in for the show, but I actually ate them yesterday.
I feel like that's not the first time you said
the
that.
The nerds clusters. They're my favorite.
Nerds
clusters. Now, what I would love to do
is
eat some nerds clusters in a Pagani.
Yeah.
How about that?
Oh,
a little drive up to 5.
I agree.
Let's talk
about
it.
Eat a ropey nerds cluster.
I like the clusters over the rope.
I love the ropes.
All right.
We're not going to get along on this pod.
Horacio Raul Pagani was born on November 10th, 1955, in the tiny rural town of Casilda, Argentina. Much of his family has Italian heritage. Relatives such as his great-grandfather immigrated from Italy's Lombardy region to Argentina in the late 1800s.
That's the northern Italian region.
It's
It butters up against
this
the
is like
Alps.
The fourth Italy mention in a row, and I'm learning so much about the country. I can't wait to get over there.
Yeah.
The family operated a bakery in Casilda. Horacio's father, Mario, quote, transmitted the value of hard work to his children, which instilled Horacio's drive to succeed at an early age. Horacio's parents also passed on a love of the arts to their son. His mother, Martha, was passionate about art in just about any way she could experience it. His father, Mario, on the other hand, loved literature and was a well-known local musician who played trumpet in a jazz band.
Oh, this is really nice.
Yeah, I'm so, telling you, they're
just sounds like two nice family. People.
Yeah.
Horacio was fascinated by cars at an early age. He spent countless hours thumbing through car magazines like Argentino's Automundo and whatever European and American publications he could get his hands on. He became particularly captivated by Italian cars and the design houses that were responsible for shaping them. Young Horacio dreamed of working in Modena, in the heart of Italy, at one of these design houses, and began experimenting with drawing and building models of his own supercar designs from balsa wood.
Balsa wood is super expensive, by the way.
Is it?
Is it?
Yeah, because I was like, I want to, for Jeopardy on the main channel, I directed that video, and I was like, I want to make balsa wood podiums so that when Jer inevitably gets angry, he can smash his podium. Mm-hmm. And it was like $48 for a 2x4.
Damn.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But can you imagine a 2x4 of balsa wood?
Yeah.
You could smash that, and it would look so cool.
That'd be sick. Wow.
Yeah.
Not long after he began making wood models, he stumbled onto an article on Leonardo da Vinci while paging through a Reader's Digest magazine.
I love his code.
The art... What?
Da Vinci's code.
Oh.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now, back to the show.
The article detailed how Da Vinci combined the principles of art and science. The idea of combining the two was a revelation for Horacio. According to Pagani Automobili themselves, this was, quote, the missing element he was seeking and which helped him get a clear vision of his path and what he intended to do. During secondary school, Horacio began experimenting with different materials like aluminum, steel, fiberglass, and plastic to build his car models. He learned, how he put it, the quote, potential and characteristics of different materials this way, and soon applied what he learned building models to restoring motorcycles. Horacio's appetite for creation was insatiable, and eventually worked his way up to building vehicles himself. Around age 14, he received a small 48cc engine as a gift. He and his friend Gustav Marini decided they could use it to build a go-kart. After getting the materials needed to make a cart, they realized they could have more fun together if they had two small bikes instead of one cart.
Two things more fun.
Yeah. You chop it down the middle.
It's like it's two motorcycles with a house in the middle.
Truly.
And Horacio's first vehicle, a mini bike, was born. Later, he worked on other vehicles, such as a buggy based on the engine and chassis from a Renault Dauphine.
Let's talk about this buggy. I love it, and I want to drive in it.
Whoa, this is not just a buggy. I mean, this is...
It's...
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's like a dune buggy, sort
this
of.
This is like a Myers Manx.
It's like a Manx.
Shell.
But definitely more like 70s design, it looks like. More like... It looks... The side profile is like a miniature, I want to say, C3 Corvette-ish. Yeah. Plopped on top of a Renault Dauphine chassis. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
The side seals are super low, and the windshield is very big.
Yeah.
I love it.
This is really cool.
The proportions on this are just right.
Yeah. This looks like something John Daly would drive at the golf course.
Oh. And he would, but it would be painted with like an American flag and have cigarette smoke.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. I just think like the lines are really gorgeous. It's just really aesthetically pleasing.
It's cool.
The Dauphine also looks like a Christina car.
I do love the Dauphine.
It's like a villain and like a Despicable Me would drive this
Gru?
To like the beach or something.
Which is a Christina car.
Sorry, the antagonist. Gru is the villain, but he's also the protagonist, right?
Yes.
The antagonist of a
I've never seen a Minion movie.
Really?
Yeah.
First ones are pretty good.
I've saw Despicable Me the first film. I've not followed up.
Whenever I need to like mess with Max, I play like the Minion covers of songs. Uh-huh. You know, like that one that I like it when you wiggle wiggle. There's one where the minions sing that, and it drives Max crazy.
You say you haven't seen a Minion movie yet. I gather in about 2 to 3 years, you will have an encyclopedic knowledge of the Minion films.
I believe this to be true.
I don't know. I might not show him any Minion stuff.
You really? Gotta tell your family though.
Hmm.
Why?
Because he could go to grandma's, and then all of a sudden the dam breaks loose.
No, I want him to be into Moana because I love Moana.
Yeah. How old's your baby again?
10 weeks.
Okay.
What are you doing?
Huh? Nothing.
Oh my God! What are you doing?
Are you getting a Minion hat for him?
I'm just over here doing stuff.
What are
Minion
you doing?
Minion onesie. Okay, I won't buy any longer.
Okay.
He's look for 3 month old.
Gotcha.
He's big.
He is big. He's got such an expressive face already. I love
him. And he's happy
so
like
cute.
All the time. And he's 2 feet tall right
now. He's just grooving, man.
Yeah.
He's a grooving little guy.
Yeah.
Horacio was something of a prodigy, and by his late teens had a wealth of experience in design under his belt. In 1974, at age 19, Horacio still had his sights on working in a design house in Modena. Taking the first step, he enrolled at La Plata University south of Buenos Aires to study industrial design. Mm. Unfortunately, though, the rapidly deteriorating political situation in the country would make Horacio's university years difficult.
Now, I don't want to get you in your head at all, but it's pronounced Modena.
Modena. I can do that. From the mid-70s to early 80s, Argentina experienced the Dirty War. It's far too complicated to explain on a car history podcast hosted by the likes of ourselves, but broadly speaking, the Dirty War was a time of political violence in which Argentina's right-wing military dictatorship systematically executed, jailed, or disappeared left-wing sympathizers as part of the larger Operation Condor that worked to do much the same thing across most of South America.
I know this sounds very serious, but Operation Condor is like one of my favorite Jackie Chan movies.
Hmm.
Really good. One of his first ones.
It was a traumatic time to be an Argentinian, and it was simply too stressful for Horacio to carry on with his education in the war's first year. The following year, he attempted to return to school, this time at the University of Rosario, to study mechanical engineering. But ultimately, he found formal education too monotonous. Horacio decided he wanted to get back into working with his hands, which he believed spurred his imagination and inventiveness more than simply reading textbooks.
Same. I love to work with my hands.
His parents
Nolan, I love to work with my
hands. Why are you looking at me like that?
I also love to work with my hands, Nolan.
What's happening here?
You know those TikToks where the guys are like, what would you do if I pulled up to the car? And I was just like,
I would pull away. I would simply pull away.
I would pull away. Oh, God.
Joe was licking his lips for you audio listeners out there.
I wouldn't look in your car is the answer to that. I'd be like, I wouldn't have even looked, man. Yeah. I would be very aware of you doing the thing. Yeah. And I would have been like, no, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Horacio's parents are pushing him to be an engineer or a scientist, as those would have been a more sure path to success. But Horacio went with what his heart was telling him. He returned to Casilda to begin building a workshop on the outskirts of town. Horacio started making anything and everything he felt like making, including bar stools, agricultural tools, devices for the handicapped, and the first official vehicle from a company carrying the name Pagani, a prototype camper. Oh, I was gonna move past it. Horacio had found his way back to the automobile once again, and his next step on the path to automotive greatness would be a big one.
During the 1970s, Formula 2 racing was immensely popular in Argentina. In his boldest move yet, Horacio decided to take a big leap and design a car to compete in the championship.
That is a huge leap. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Formula 2 was probably more approachable back then, but still, that's like...
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do Formula 1 just yet, but... He recruited some friends to help and began the arduous process of designing a race car from scratch. In Horacio's case, necessity was the mother of invention.
What's the mother-in-law of invention?
Creativity.
Like when you have to build a house in your backyard because you can't share a house with your mother-in-law.
An ADU?
That's what they were called, mother-in-law units back in the day.
Granny units?
Yeah.
I mean, that's necessity. So that's necessity. So that's
sanity.
So wait, necessity. Oh, that's already the mother.
That's the thing.
Damn it.
that's what I'm saying.
Necessity is the mother-in-law of invention. Though he had a lot of experience in body work and working with different materials, other areas such as suspension design and aerodynamics were totally new for Horacio. The process of designing a Formula 2 car from scratch took nearly 2 years to complete. That's why it's called Formula 2. In the end, he was still left with a major missing component, the engine.
Pretty important.
It is. He repeatedly reached out to Renault to secure an engine sponsorship and heard nothing back. Eventually, Horacio's persistence paid off and Renault called him in to meet, but it wasn't a normal pitch meeting. Horacio had to present his car and plead his case at a dinner of over 300 attendees.
Ooh.
And it worked.
Oh.
God, I've never had to convince 300 people to do something. Anyway.
The Renault brass were amazed by the car, which had been designed by someone unknown to the racing world that lived in the boonies. They were so impressed that they not only agreed to supply two engines, but to incorporate the cars into their official team.
Whoa.
Wow. No kidding.
Whoa.
When Horacio, yeah, it's super crazy. When Horacio's F2 car made its debut in 1979, the 24-year-old's life was changed forever. The car bore the number 1 and was driven by Augustin Beaumont, the previous year's champion. The car quickly caught the attention of fans and the most prestigious engine designer in Argentina, Oresta Berta, who asked to meet the car's creator. Berta was shown to the pits and introduced to Horacio, and the two developed an instant bond. In October 1982, through his ventures in F2 and his newfound friendship in Berta, Horacio had the opportunity to meet the legendary Juan Manuel Fangio, a former F1 driver from Argentina with 5 world championships to his name, which was a record at the time. He was immediately impressed with the young designer and saw a great amount of potential in him. This chance meeting with Fangio would prove to be crucial for Horacio's personal and professional growth, and perhaps even the hypercar market as we know today.
If you want to hear some of his reflections on his relationship with Fangio, check out the Big Three episode where we interviewed him and he shares some insight.
The man himself,
yeah,
talking
cool.
about the other man.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
I just want to stop real quick to say, like, a 24-year-old. Like, sometimes I get lost in these stories. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, sure. 24 years old, and you're, again, pleading your case to 300 people,
yeah.
and they're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to let the previous year's champion drive your car on our official team.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that at 24.
I think I was living on 17. A cruise ship, and I'm not joking.
It's also crazy that everything fell in line like this. Like, three super unlikely things had to happen for him to get to the point where he is now. And it all happened like very quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, he met the right people. They liked him. They wanted to help him. And also he designed an amazing car.
Yeah.
And so everything just kind of like lined up for him in the best way.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's just so wild. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
You gotta be ready for the moment when it comes for you.
That
for
is
sure.
true.
Yeah. That's what Eminem says.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of 24-year-olds, I could not, like, I'm watching Love Island. You're on it too, right?
Yes, I'm on US or
US.
UK?
US.
Okay, I finished UK and I am now watching US because I am demented.
Mm-hmm. You know Leah?
Yes.
God, I don't like Leah.
I like her so much. She's so problematic.
How far are you into it?
They just did this dance behind closed walls where they decide if they're going to leave their couple or join it.
Oh.
Nolan's staring at the camera like Jim from The Office. He was over us today.
Not you guys. I'm just over at Love Island.
Oh, yeah. Does Chloe watch it, right?
No, thank God.
Chloe doesn't watch it?
She has, but she's not like current with it.
Well, this is something that she and I will have to talk about.
But anyways, Leah's 24. Leah in this show is 24. And I'm like, there's no way she could ever design an F2 car. But that's my only reference for 24-year-olds is like that. Oh, I guess like Brett, who runs our social media.
He could drive. I think he could.
Horacio could dance behind a wall, but Leah could never F2 car. Horacio expressed to Fangio his dream of moving to Italy and designing cars, and Fangio was determined to help the young man make that dream a reality. Fangio became a mentor to the now 27-year-old Horacio and graciously sent 5 recommendation letters to various leaders of the Italian auto industry, like Enzo Ferrari and Lamborghini's Giulio Alfieri, in order to help him find work.
Wow.
Horacio was too excited to wait for a reply and moved to Italy with his girlfriend, Cristina Perez, in 1983. According to Pagani Automobili, when the two arrived in Italy, they only had a tent and 2 bicycles, and they were in a, quote, precarious financial situation. They got married shortly after and established a home of sorts at a campground near Como.
That's so romantic. Just 2 lovebirds on the verge of
destitution. Horacio and Cristina took modest jobs to stay afloat. Horacio worked as a gardener and a welder, while Cristina worked for a relative nearby selling handmade items to tourists. Eventually, one of Fangio's recommendation letters paid off when he was contacted by the aforementioned Alfieri from Lamborghini.
Wow.
See, this is why I whenever I go abroad or any tourist destinations, I buy those CDs. I buy those little knickknacks. I spend hours upon hours talking to these vendors because they might be the next Horacio Pagani.
Oh my God. Mm. Can you imagine Chloe just like, come on, dude.
I know.
You don't even speak Italian. No,
but I'm there. I'm listening.
You're using the translate thing on your phone. Yeah. Drive me nuts.
Are you really going to listen to this Italian drill artist?
Yeah, I will. He's on the verge of something great.
Can write your name on rice.
Alfieri offered him a job as a, quote, third-level worker in Lambo's experimental body shop. Horacio and Cristina were soon off to Sant'Agata Bolognese near Bologna, where they moved into a small apartment. Horacio was the first in and last out every day.
Like George Costanza.
He quickly made an impression at the company, and within no time was involved in just about every project at the facility, including the experimental SUV, the LM, the Yalpa, and the Countach. In 1985, he even convinced Lamborghini to create a composites division, of which he was made manager. Horacio was fascinated by the work, and it was here where he broadened his knowledge of materials that would be crucial to the future of the hypercar, including Kevlar and carbon.
I always wondered why they named every other Lamborghini after, like, a bull.
Mm-hmm.
But then Countach is, like, a Spanish exclamation of, like, it's basically, like, the F word.
Yeah.
I really? Think from the Basque region or something like that. Huh. It's you're like, Countach or something. I don't know.
Sound off in the comments if you know why.
If you're from the Basque region, I love your cheesecake. Tell us what he means by Countach.
In the late 80s, Lamborghini had a very special project cooking up for the 25th anniversary of the company. The idea was to create an ultimate edition Countach, and to take the supercar to the next level, they needed Horacio's expertise in composite materials. The aptly named 25th Anniversario was one of the first supercars to make use of carbon and Kevlar. Horacio was convinced these strong and lightweight materials were the future and lobbied Lamborghini to create a separate composite research facility, but the company refused. Rather than take no for an answer, Horacio secured the funds on his own to open a research facility by himself. This new workshop, Horacio Pagani Composite Research Company, began doing contract work for Lamborghini as well as for aerospace companies and Formula One.
Wow.
Some of their most important work on resins and carbon fiber informed the development of the Diablo, in which Pagani-made parts were found to be 40% lighter than Lamborghini's in-house design components.
Wow.
They couldn't afford it at the time. They're like always on the verge of bankruptcy during this era.
But dude, what a hustler, man. Yeah. So Horacio continued doing a variation of his composite work for Lamborghini until 1991, when the Gulf War began and an economically strained Chrysler Corporation, who owned Lamborghini at the time, put a hold on all composite project development. But Horacio was determined to advance the technology using the automobile as a medium, and he refused to let his work die or be tethered to the fortunes of another company. The time had finally come for him to bring his own car designs to life.
It's a time for me to go.
Okay, so 1993, how old was he here?
He was born in 55, so he was...
same age as my dad.
My dad, too.
My mom.
My mom and my dad.
Wow.
Oh, my dad's older than Horacio by a few months, though.
Minus 1955. 37? 38? Okay, now he's normal ages for success because he's older than me. And when someone's younger than me, I'm like, whoa. Yeah. And someone's older than me, I'm like, makes sense. I've got plenty of room to grow.
Well, I'm at that age where sports stars that are my same age, their sons and daughters are becoming sports stars. That's, and I'm like, God damn it, dude. Yeah. There goes my chances
of going
on the Mavericks.
I thought you were going to say that they're all retiring and everyone's talking about how they're old as shit constantly, which is also really weird.
I was watching college football highlights yesterday. Chloe was in the kitchen. I was watching, I think it was a Boston College FSU game. And the quarterback breaks off this huge run. I'm like, damn, that kid's fast.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Then I was like, I heard myself say that. I was like, that wasn't that long ago. That was that guy's age. That was only a few years ago.
That's so wild.
Yeah. You're 31?
31 now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that being kid was 31. Fast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
31? You liked being 31?
I loved being 31. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I too loved
it. What about 32?
Also
32
good.
Is great.
Okay, good.
I think it was 35, 36 when I was like, whoa, I don't even look like I did when I was in my early 30s. And I was like,
oh,
getting wrinkles and shit.
I don't know.
I'm 35, so.
In 1993, Horacio bought land in La Graciosa industrial area of San Cesario Sul Panero in Modena.
He almost did it. He almost said Modena
almost
like
did
me.
It fluidly. The place he had dreamed of designing cars since he was a kid, and he set to work.
Hell yeah.
In designing the car, he looked to Da Vinci's code of marrying art and science as a guiding principle. Horacio's car had to be beautiful inside and out, but also had to be on the cutting edge of what was possible, or as Pagani put it, merging technology and taste.
Ooh. Nice.
The project was officially known as Project C8, but inside the walls of the design house, it was known as the Fangio F1. It would also be the car's official name when it was revealed to the public in a few years' time. Tragically, Fangio passed away in July 1995, before the car had a chance to make its debut. Mm. Horacio thought it would be inappropriate to market the car with the Fangio name after his friend's death, so he went with another, named for a fierce wind originating in the Argentinian Andes, the Zonda.
That's a classy move.
That is super classy.
My friend died. I'm not going to name it after him.
Yeah.
That, because, you know, I think there's some less than considerable companies that would maybe do that.
Yeah, like, you know? Name their whole company after a mathematician.
Where's this going?
Tesla.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, Elon didn't know Tesla, though. I'm just saying, like,
I know.
It'd be an easy way to be like, I don't know, like if I died and then you were like, I'm going to name
my plunger company Sykes.
Yeah.
Sykes shit suckers.
You might move a few units.
Yeah.
Initially off the hype.
Especially
because
Sykes shit suckers.
Yeah. Like,
I think it would have more
from?
To do with shit suckers
that,
than Sykes.
How long have you had that in your back pocket? Did I say something?
No, but also though, is it not an homage to name it after it? Like, I get where the marketing part would be uncomfortable, but I also think like calling it the Fangio, if you're planning on doing that all along.
I think it'd be weird if he had any living relatives.
Mm.
Be like, I'm profiting off of your family name.
I agree with the profiting part, mm-hmm. but if this was already in the works, would it then just become like, oh, this is a legacy point? But it appears that in their relationship, he would not feel it was a legacy point. So moot point. I'm just positing because I don't think it's like inherently capitalistic. I think it's more just like, are you trying to dedicate this to your friend? Because if I died and you named it Joe, what company do you think I would own?
Christina's butt liquor, wet wipes.
Great. I would not feel bad about that.
Feels like a tongue in your butt. That's the catchphrase.
Feels like a tongue in your butt.
All right. Let's move on, please.
I can do it for everyone in this room right now if you want.
No, let's save that for lunchtime when you get really gross.
The Zonda took shape using the aggressive raw Le Mans prototype and fighter jets as inspiration.
Makes sense.
As well as the intricate details of luxury watches and the elegance of Riva luxury boats, as we all know very well. And in honor of Fangio, who drove for Mercedes, a partnership was sought out with Mercedes to supply the engines. Then in 1998, at age 43, Horacio decided to restructure his company into an official auto manufacturer bearing his name, Pagani Automobili. A year later, the Zonda was ready and officially made its debut at the 1999 International Motor Show at Geneva. It was a gamble to enter a space dominated by titans like Ferrari and Lamborghini, but critics were quickly convinced. The Zonda had the outrageous supercar spaceship aura of the Countach or F40, a carbon fiber body, a beautifully ornate interior, and Mercedes bulletproof 444 horsepower M120 V12 engine.
Wow.
It's crazy to think that a V12 can be super reliable, but I was talking to a guy on Instagram who basically only works on these engines and does engine swaps with them and stuff down in Alabama.
Hmm. That's where Mercedes is, one of their factories.
Oh, that makes sense then. Mm-hmm. Duh.
Outside Birmingham. Birmingham.
I was ready to move on, but the Zonda's performance was equally impressive. 0 to 60 came in 4 seconds flat, just like me. Blistering acceleration, even for today, and it could even keep up with the best of its contemporaries on the track. Orders poured in faster, more powerful versions of the Zonda followed, such as the Zonda F, with the F standing for Fangio.
See, that's nice.
See, that's,
okay, cool.
I like that.
You're right. That's classy.
One really cool thing we got from the interview was that Pagani loves his cars so much that he often buys them back years later. And he had just spent $17 million on a Zonda F buying one back from a client.
I felt my soul like shrivel a little bit when he said that, because that's so, not that I'm expecting like a car that was originally like $3 million to depreciate, or a Pagani to depreciate at all, but it's like, I'll never own one of these things.
But I also like, is he buying it or is it like a work expense? You know, like it could live in the Pagani factory and be a write-off for them or something.
That's a good point.
Damn. Just start an LLC.
Yeah, Nolan.
And then to spend $17 million?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, so then Sykes, shit suckers, can buy the $17
I bought this.
I think
plungers.
I can get the Instagram handle for that pretty easily.
Well, that was like the like sound that you put over a swear.
Oh, me?
You just made that sound with your voice.
Oh, I'm very talented
with
my laugh.
Dude, these Zonda Fs are so cool. Here's an orange one on Google that I'm looking at. It's like, man, I wish that was my life. You know what? They're probably not happy, though. I mean, probably pretty happy.
Ooh.
Whoever has a Zonda F that I want, I just tell myself that they're not as happy as me and move on. But that's probably, they got their own shit going on, right?
Cope much?
Yeah.
What, you know, copium?
What? The grass is always orange Pagani Zonda F on the other side, you know, so.
So the ultimate version of the Zonda, the R, debuted in 2007 and managed to set a Nordschleife production car record with a lap time of 6 minutes 47 seconds.
If you have a Pagani Zonda in Southern California, can I please drive it?
Yeah.
Please.
You'll make content and shout you out.
I'll do more than that.
I'll come in 4 seconds.
Shit's not the only thing he sucks. Let's just say that.
All right.
This is a married man.
Yeah.
This is a married man
point,
calling athletes.
Oh,
young
men.
I'm
not wearing my ring. It's because we're recording this before my wedding.
Oh, yes.
It's probably after my wedding when it's coming out.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Weird.
The Zonda became nothing short of a global phenomenon and was featured on Top Gear. In any car magazines you could get your hands on in the early 2000s. Here was a brand new supercar company with the audacity to join the ranks of some of the most prestigious brands in the world, and it succeeded. Horacio's dream, one he had imagined as a small boy in Argentina, had finally come true.
Pagani could have retired at this point, but sleep is for the dead, and shortly after the Zonda was introduced, Pagani started to work on his next car. For his next act, Horacio had the benefit of prestige, cash flow, more advanced composites, and car building know-how under his belt. The result was the Huayra, which debuted in 2011. Named for Huayra Tata, the Quechua god of wind, the Huayra built upon the template established by the Zonda. Like its predecessor, it used a V12 sourced from Mercedes and made anywhere from 730 to 888 horsepower depending on the variant. Horacio once again pushed the envelope of composites. The Huayra was the first car to use carbon titanium HP62, a material even stronger and lighter than standard carbon fiber.
These things are like 1,800 pounds, too.
For real?
What?
They're super light.
Oh, my God.
Let me see. 2,600 pounds.
Still, that's
so light.
Very light.
That's like a
Miata.
Yeah.
No.
It's lighter than a Miata because they're 2,800 pounds.
And you said they're like surprisingly big too, right? No. No,
I mean, they just
it.
Look, I don't, yeah, I mean, they are long. Like that's yeah. a long car. 200, wow. How many did I say? 203 inches?
203 inches. That's super long.
Because yeah. like how long is a Miata?
My truck is 208.
I would say a Miata is 170 inches.
Yeah. That's my Mustang wild. Was 186.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's loco.
It's loco.
In 2022, Pagani launched their current hypercar, the Utopia, once again drawing upon the principles of artful design and cutting-edge technology to bring a truly unique car to market. When asked about what the future may hold for the brand, Horacio says he prefers to let the desires of the customers lead the way.
Mm.
He has also stated that this collaborative approach with his customers is why Pagani currently does not have plans for an electric or hybrid car. It's not something his customers are interested in.
This was in the interview that we did.
Yeah. In a world where 200 miles per hour is pedestrian and super fast, 0 to 60 times have been democratized by electric cars, Horacio believes three key things separate Pagani from the pack. Simplicity, lightness, and the art of keeping driving, quote, pure. For all of its futuristic looks and spacecraft-worthy materials, Pagani Hypercars represents a turn back to a traditional sense of driving pleasure, with its latest cars even being offered with manual transmissions.
Horacio's story is one of perseverance, passion, and a love for his craft. From his humble beginnings in Argentina making models from wood as a child, to making mini bikes, a buggy, and eventually an F2 car from scratch. Horacio's story is also one of friendship, and he credits the friends he made while in F2 with landing him the opportunity to design cars in Europe. He was no stranger to struggling for his art and taking risks. He moved to Italy with no job, took work as a gardener, and when Lamborghini didn't believe in his composites research, he took out a loan to fund it himself. Drawing from Da Vinci's marriage of art and science, his cars are just as much sculptures as they are technological marvels. His pioneering of full composite chassis revolutionized the auto industry and are now fixtures on practically every supercar. His ornate, watch-inspired interiors found their way into supercars as well, with cars like Bugatti Tourbillon having a gauge cluster modeled after a watch face. If Horacio's influence on the auto industry continues into the future as it has in the past 25 years, then maybe those of us tired of huge screens, hybrid powertrains, and minimalist design and a love for the analog may just be saved after all.
Hey, right. Dude, I can't believe he moved there with just a tent.
And a bike.
That's crazy, dude.
And a wife.
And a wife.
Named Christina. Also my name.
What is your name?
Spelled different.
I mean, just an amazing story and still incredible cars. If you have a Pagani, I would love to drive one someday. Really cool to see him still striving to make just the best possible car he can. And
it's like one of those, it's like meeting Tom Hanks where you're like, oh, everything they say about you is true. Like, he was super down to earth, willing to talk to us, which like, I'm pretty sure he'd never heard of us. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But, The company's run like a family.
Son Christopher,
not the family.
We've talked to a few times. He's super nice. Great family over there. Great business. Yeah. So, man, love these cars. Let's get to some listener mail.
Bonjour. My name is Lucas from Topeka, Kansas. I am a mechanic for USPS and love listening to you guys during my day. Thanks. I was wondering if you could do an episode on mail delivery vehicles, the mail trucks, UPS trucks, and any other vehicles used. There are two trucks coming out for the post office, and they are dog ugly. Also, congrats to you all for getting engaged. Thank you, and keep it juiced.
Nice. Thank you, Lucas. We've been wanting to do a video for the main channel on Grumman LLV, long-lasting vehicles, which is the post office Jeep is. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do an episode of Pass Gas. Because it'd probably make more sense to do a pass gas than a main channel video. But thank you for the suggestion.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. Follow my co-hosts on social media. You got Joji Weber, Christina Felsky, at Christina Felsky.
That's it.
Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like.
And go and buy a Sykes shit sucker.
All right. Big thanks to the crew. We got Edgar Grajeda, Audrey Holden, and thank you to you for listening. Bye.